Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Elizabeth Savage. Elizabeth Savage is the author of Idyllium and Grammar and two chapbooks, Jane and Paige, or Sister Goose, and Woman Looking at a Vase of Flowers. She is also the poetry editor for Kestrel, a journal of literature and art. She teaches at Fairmont State University in West Virginia. Hi, Elizabeth. How are you?
Hi, Jan. I'm good. Thank you so much for having me again.
Yeah. You were here in 2012, and now you're back, so we're really happy to hear some of your new poems.
Well, thank you. So I'll get started with some poems from the new book, Idyllium, that begins with a section titled Matter. And I'll read the opening poem, Path. Everywhere there is a cushion, a spacing invitation, an arm's breadth exit ramp, caution thrown wide to race. Anywhere there is an angle measuring a sheet of sky. Somewhere a limit, elsewhere fine strokes denote a wind of suspension, of trespassing intention. Thorns will climb stems, thorns will throw in leaves, acre over acre of elegy. Elsewhere there is a fastening, a note pinned to your coat, another cyclone centering, suitable for wandering. Statuary. There's a better shrine to the contrary, buried to her waist, skullcap whiter than she is cold, gray pope of January, hard-skirted piety. Floodlight. Jointed integer of alien materials, you cannot be a fence. Glass and plastic antidote for the chimney's intimate smoke, as the sky does a dead-on mimic, no parody, no sun. Mantis. Good servant, gone servile, anger softly heals a sister self to shadow, self, harmless, as a luxury lies sleepily, leaffully, those green hands lighting at her mouth. And I read a couple more from this first section of Idyllium. And I feel like I should pause here to explain that Idyllium is my effort to use Homer's Iliad as a lens through which to study West Virginia, particularly Fairmont, West Virginia, where I've lived for 14 years now. And I wanted to look at where I lived without the habits of seeing it, realizing that as I continued to live there, so much would become familiar to me that it would be difficult to see it in the same way. So Homer's Iliad was strange enough for me to sharpen my vision, I think, and see things that I did not realize were around me. But this poem is titled Zeusical the Musical. Let a company man sell all he wants as the father drills the mind and with shining eyes churns the mines, sons in coal, sons in coats like sons in gold, hold their wars with rock, in battle punch the clock. And the last one I'll read from the first section maybe I'll read two more. From the first section, I should say also, although this sounds like a mess, that I used Gertrude Stein's Tender Buttons as a way of sort of organizing what I was studying around me, sort of a paradomestic foray into a state produced by war. This poem's titled A Creek of Containment. Not from treetops thin with youth, something nearby is split and cries to itself and churns the wind. The wind utters a threat but never makes good, as with a surgeon who finds the dark cells regrouped deep in the ear, also beyond sight, whose instruments can pry the skull, like the branch that cries, alike they sweep the mind. when veils fall and flow in the forest below, the wind frets loose, the pines abound, the wind will finally smooth it down. Cynic the canine. The angel of death is a blue-eyed dog when it streaks like sparks through leaves. The angel of death is a blue-eyed star dressed in weather balloon masks, a caption of hills and trees. The angel of death is a dove spread in your open purse, feathers, tobacco, and chalk. The angel of death is a blackboard stroked by cursive contrails, pressing the next yellow lesson. The blue-eyed dog is a muzzle that whimpers down in your boot, languid as smoke hushed under leaves, faster than you can move.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Elizabeth Savage. She's reading from her new book entitled Idyliad. Elizabeth, you said a lot. You have some interesting, like really short poems, but then you have this wild framework that you're working with. So I have a number of questions, but can you talk about the short poem? Because I think it's really hard to write a successful short poem, and you have many short poems. Can you talk about why or how you've gotten to that form?
It actually came very naturally to me. As a little girl, I fell in love with E.E. Cummings' spare poems and really image-driven, sound-driven poetry. And as I got older and decided to start writing poetry very deliberately when I was in my early 20s, I wanted to write like Adrienne Rich, and I felt like I couldn't really be a poet until I did. And
good way to set yourself up there.
Well, I remember trying very hard to imitate some of her sonnets. But when I was in my mid-20s, I found Laureen Niedecker's work. And it's not that I stopped wanting to try to write in different ways, but I felt like, oh, I already am writing poetry. I don't have to be able to write in these other ways. I felt like I had a familiar. And her work has been a guardian for me throughout my life. I still turn to her for sort of advice about how to write in and out of rhyme. It's difficult when you start working with rhyme to break out of it again and to move back into sound associations rather than hard rhyme. Mm-hmm. And I moved into rhyme so deliberately because I had avoided it mm-hmm. for such a long time.
Yeah.
The short poem has always come really natural to me, and I feel sort of lazy when I stay there. Although, after writing Grammar, which I wrote a lot of longer lines and different forms, I went back to distillation and neologism to get back in touch with that minimalist bent.
Well, yeah. I mean, you have to go where you are meant to be, and clearly that's where you live. And I mean, I love the granite pail. Laureen, I thought it was Niedecker. Is it Niedecker?
That's how it's. I believe it's supposed to be.
Well, either way, she's a great poet.
Yeah.
Well, she would know.
I remember a letter to Zukoski where she, it's Nie, K-N-E-E,
Niedecker. Oh, okay, Niedecker. So, okay, that's good. That's, but yeah, great. It's good when you find someone in your poetry family. It's like finding some kind of home.
It is, and that has been my experience. I've also found poets that are, again, like family that you don't always get along with. Laura Writing has been really important to me, too, mm-hmm. although I find her work a very different experience to read and to talk about. I'm going back to Barbara Guest right now, and I have that same feeling that this is not someone I'm in love with, but boy, do I have a lot to learn mm-hmm. from this writer. So,
I think that's so important to work with writers whose work is very different than yours, and you might not in any way want to write like them, but they have so much to teach us. Are you going to move to another book now, or?
I'd like to stay in Idyliad for a little bit longer, if that's okay.
That would be great, because I have a couple more questions about that.
Okay. And how about I move to the middle section that's titled Comestibles, and it begins with a poem that became a template for a later project. Green on green. Know the June in juniper, biting tips of palest spruce, summer juice. And the five line is a Nita Kerrigan form. I decided to make the last two have some kind of rhyme. A poison scarf. Like a cordial thickens as a volcano sips at its trigger, then breathes by burning, sleeps by seeping. Baum Kuchen. With leaves like these, who needs dessert? What doesn't take you down makes you older, frosted in humor, self-sleeving self. Oh, effervescent forest erupting from earth as helicopters burst like sugared disdain fizzing from the veins of a sweet-toothed god. Swizzle stick. Oh, patio crowning flower. Oh, courage-minded dandelion. Oh, skin-rasping lawn chair. Oh, chill of evening metal on sunburned spare. Oh, vole-churned walk. Oh, sharp-toothed Sirius above bloodshot stalks. Oh, gold-floating hornet. Oh, open-throated blade. Oh, bright-glancing slope-sliding street-tempered wave. One of the first poems I wrote before I knew what I was exactly what I wanted to do with this series is Mud and Water. With a spoon of North, my good American, it all goes down more smoothly than cocoa or light coffee, sheer black, silky like ice in the nude. And I'll read a poem written in reference to the water problems that were such occasion for national attention a couple of years ago, and that I received lots of concerned calls from friends around the country about whether or not I had anything to drink. A glass of water. Condensation brings down the air as wilderness wipes its feet, visible like one who splashes past a chip in the rim to join the buzz brimming at the pail. Ramps and ramparts, this mean wretch of an onion. Bent on faulting a man without fault, overgathered as hunger arcs towards delicacy, fancy like a downtown dressed in vacancy, leaks its history into funds.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Elizabeth Savage. She's reading from her new book, Idyllid. Okay, so I want to talk to you about the structure of the book in terms of, you said you wanted to write it through the lens of the Idyllid, I mean the Iliad, I'm getting confused now, and which, you know, just thinking about that is enough to make my brain, you know, blow up a little bit. So I'm like, wow. I mean, I think it just brings up a lot of questions to me, and you talked about how to look at West Virginia without falling into habits of seeing it a certain way. And I think that's really interesting. But then I get lost when I start thinking of how to look at West Virginia through Homer's Iliad. I can't even make my mind go there. So maybe you could, you know, help us.
Well, I didn't know what would happen exactly, but part of the effort to see things that I couldn't see seemed to demand tropes mm-hmm. that I didn't use, mm-hmm. didn't think in, didn't write in as, you know, a historical matter. I avoided simile. I avoided repetition. You know, part of writing short poems is you cut stuff out. You don't want any of the extra syntax that the kind of writing that the Iliad uses, calls on. So it was a good exercise for me just in terms of the double similes, the epithets, the macro to micro vision of that awful, violent poem. So that both the unfamiliar just structure of it, but then that it struck me as also appropriate, since West Virginia is the product of war, a state born out of war, to use a war poem as a way to look at the territory created from this history. So it does seem strange, but it was gratifying, and I mm-hmm. think it worked because I have become attentive in ways because of writing the book that I wasn't before, and mm-hmm. I recognized my feelings about where I lived that I would not have known otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, I think strange is great. I was just, and the structure part makes sense. I guess I was wondering also how to access then with this structure and this lens, then how to access feelings with that there is, I guess, a question I had. And I guess, you know, obviously it depends on your writing process, but how associations are made, et cetera. But that seems very different to me.
Well, it is, but then think about Achilles, known for his anger, and the death of Hector, and the intensity of those emotions, and very little that is kind or gentle mm-hmm. is recognized in that poem. Well, there is a little bit when mm-hmm. Hector goes home, but I think that was also an association that drew me to it. And my husband's a classicist mm-hmm. who adores Homer and loves the Iliad and reads it in all different translations and has a favorite. And mm-hmm. And
so you're kind of immersed in it anyway.
Yes. So it was part of it too. It was also a domestic project. I've made this life here in this place. So
yeah, no, it's really fascinating. Okay. Could you read some more?
I'd love to. And I was thinking that one poem from the last section is Territory versus Property, kind of gets at some of what I was hoping to see. And there's an epigraph from Gertrude Stein's Complete Portrait of Picasso. Let me recite what history teaches. History teaches. East rails into west, where safe belies spent, and the white tail leaps over whitewashed fence, and white water streams like a darkened spring down the desolate face of June, as bodies run in place, floating hats, flowing boots. Flophouse. Cover comes by invitation, as shelter sizes by fee, and beyond arrangements made on the fly or taken under wing. Deeper comforts furrow and ditches sift to floors, concealed like drains and fatherlands, their regulations warm. When weather suits our feathers, they choose the shape of shade, like capes lured over shoulders, the kind that tents replace. Egg machine, and this bears some explanation. In Fairmont, I learned that on the east side, there used to be vending machines that had eggs in them. And they still exist in rural places that don't have grocery stores that are nearby. But I understand from the locals that while the intention was to help out the little old Italian ladies when they were caught short without enough eggs, that they became a wonderful resource for young boys out at night looking for trouble. So, egg machine. Snow will show when you have gone, like the morning shows what you have done. Night cracks, quick as a ripple, near as a fist, blue and fickle. And the last poem in the book is Canoe. In truth, there are two, and the violet-footed evening their ocean, inverted wishing pools, emptying washes without change, slick in the trying rain. Okay, so that's the samples from Idyliad, lots of short poems. So I'm going to take the opportunity to read from a chap book that I wrote after I finished grammar and felt sort of lonely for a project. So I turned to this poem by Wallace Stevens that I had loved for a long time but couldn't really crack open. Woman looking at a vase of flowers. And this is a series of poems that function sort of as a detail of that poem. So that phrases from the poem itself that function as titles, and these poems are my effort to get into Stevens. Woman looking. Inhuman owl, neither bends nor breaks its miracle twig. That live stillness is flight. Strange how change enlightens. Within her, strength in miniature, wings closed, her call falls unbruised. At a vase, the spindliest stem brought upright, when the hooting happens, even empty, cull and keep, even thunder, what wind dissolves. Of flowers, here, bootleg violet, patient leaf, furzed evergreen, I wait. Form upon the piano. Unimaginable what manages to balance, sound slope, imposture, originary spine. Dissolving into birds. Clouded girls in threes, sifting from the sea. Particular wrists drift. Is it surrender? Again in east wind. Is the report of the weather and the weather itself. Imposition follows form. A striating breeze seizes the shutters, shutter, ingenious door.
Elizabeth, let me ask you, I'm interested in your projects. It seems like you're really project-oriented, and I'm wondering if you ever write without project.
I do. Okay. In fact, I became hooked on projects when I was writing Jane and Paige, which I wrote over about 3 years, I think. Mm-hmm. And as I worked on those poems individually, I was more productive than I'd ever been in my life. Mm-hmm. And I think because I always had them to go back to,
yeah,
go back to the girls.
Mm-hmm.
But when they were finished, I felt driven by that structure, and it became more closed with grammar as a project.
Mm-hmm.
When I was writing grammar, I didn't write much of anything else, mm-hmm, because I was under a kind of a deadline to write it and to get the book done. But since then, I've made myself break that habit too. I don't want to depend on, because I think that can become sort of artificial to come up with some kind of a project every single time or some kind of gimmick.
Well, I mean, yeah, I'm not criticizing it. I think I'm just curious because I know some other writers who are really project focused,
yeah,
and it's just interesting what drives us, yeah, and how we find our way into poems.
Yeah. Usually it's primarily something like I want to get inside this poem so badly, mm-hmm, and I can't do that without writing. I've read it over and over. I've thought about it. But I need to write it to know it better.
Mm-hmm.
And I only as a secondary thing think of what I need to face, like needing to face my avoidance of similes, needing to face my I need to face that. Well, part of it was bigotry, that it seemed that
that's
so
the way you said it.
So many,
made it sound like a therapy
I
issue.
Know,
I need
I'm
to face
sorry.
My avoidance
I'm too serious
of similes.
About these. But with Stevens, I was returning to the spareness that I had originally written and that I had gotten kind of away from in the exercise that was grammar. This is also a very spiritual exploration of, which any Stevens engagement is going to be, is, mm-hmm, how do we find the unseen world and the seen,
mm-hmm,
world.
Mm-hmm. We have time for a number of more poems.
I think I'd like to read a couple of poems from the coda section.
Okay.
That turns away from woman looking at a vase of flowers to on the adequacy of landscape. And these poems, there's just six of them,
okay,
at the end, are more in conversation with Stevens as a canon, as a collective, than one poem in particular. People in the air. As if the vein quickened fright or hummed like a quiver in most, who elude shush, shush, hollow wings for the soft pulse of adequacy. They seek this owl out in the night to measure central things. what they are. Redbird in the red, indebted to your sky, what woe to rise from heavy ledges round with rye. Blackbird breaks the globe of day, people in the air cannot save. Up above the world so high, they spy horizons of what they are, exchanged for worlds below. The reaching branch, the redbird's home. When day is done and towers tall, all birds are black against the sun. And the last poem is The Sensible Range. A salute to calm in the sharp-dressed day, the extent of men, made, unmade, who trade radiance for strength, or so they think. What warning, what delight, returns suffering with appetite. Weightless above this blue of dread, the ship repairs in its wreck of red. And if there's time, I'd love to read a couple of new poems that came out of a horrible writer's block, which you probably know. Writer's block is not about not being able to write. It's about writing horrible poems that you really hope no one's going to find.
What are you trying to say?
I've thought at times, I hope I don't have a heart attack and slump over my computer and someone will come along and say, we should publish the last thing she ever wrote. And no, you know, delete key is my last gesture. So I was trying to write through that using the structure of that little poem I read in Idyliad, Green on Green. So I started writing, made myself every single day write a five-liner until it shook something out. So I have these paired poems, the five-liner and then a mutant that grew out of them. Okay. And I have a few of those. When in autumn, stay put, light insects and late lettuces, all beauty moving. When in autumn, talk that Roman talk. When in October, scatter candy corn, no backward look. When roads divide, travel light. When a cabin, dream of plumbing. When trying to talk with a man, ghost in the machine age, see innocence. When dusting Garfield's chair, sympathize what goes around, spins around the dynamo, spinning from a virgin's eye. Once elected pope, orbit your shoes, then take a stand. When washing, plumbing again. When indoors, the infinite out. When a door jam, the mind's hinge squeaking on its year, well seasoned. Each season sweetened, bright with leaves of reason. Each reason leading to autumn, chattering away its Latin.
The poetry of Elizabeth Savage. Thank you so much. That was great.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Saturday morning at 6:30 for Prosody, 90.5 WESA.